I'm here in Listnesky and I'm talking to Maureen North. Maureen, your maiden name was Moore.
That's right,
and
yes.
Could you tell me about your childhood and growing up? Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in a place called Tony McElduff, Crude Hill, County Cavan. I was the eldest of five children. The Moores had lived there since, I think, John Moore came over to fight with Cromwell. I was the eldest of five children. I had a very happy childhood, and my aunt was a teacher, and we went to school, to Newgrove School, with her. And then I went to the Royal School in Cavan, and I did my senior leaving certificate there. But in the meantime, when I was in my last year at school in Cavan, my father's uncle, who had a farm down at Fastry, do you know where Fastry is now?
No.
It's just on the border beside a new sawmills, near outside Red Hills. Well, my father's uncle, and he died and left my father the farm. The farm was Fastry was here. It was in Southern Ireland. There came a house for sale in Northern Ireland, just inside the Northern Ireland border at Ballyhoe Bridge. And my father had a dairy herd. His father died when he was 13, and his elder brother had gone to veterinary college and become a vet. And his younger sister had become a teacher, but he was left to mind the farm. And then, of course, he got married and had five children. And he realised that milk was so much dearer and everything seemed to be so much better in Northern Ireland that he sold the farm up at Tony McElduff and bought this farm down at Ballyhoe so that he could run the two farms together. And when I did my leave in cert, and I got six honours in it, which including honours Irish, and I got a call to the training college, the teachers' training college in Dublin. Now, I was 16, 17 at the time. So I had met this man, Kenneth North, whose uncle had a shop on the border as well, and we had become very friendly. And he didn't want me to go to the college. He said, if you go way up to Dublin, you'll forget all about me. And he says, would you not marry me instead? And I thought, 17, well, I did really love him. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, I'm not going to ask my father. You better ask him. So Ken plucked up the courage. Well, he didn't. He was a courageous man anyway. He said, oh, yes. He says, I'll ask him. And so he went in, knocked the door, and of course came in and had a chat with my father and my mother. And my father, Mummy thought I should have gone on to college, but Daddy said, well, he says, I don't mind. He says, I have no objection to you. I think you're a fine man and you make her a good husband, but I think you should wait a couple of years. And so we thought it over anyway. And in the meantime, there was a friend of ours, Mrs. Talbot, who was teaching up in Billis. Do you know where Billis is? Just outside Virginia.
I do. Yes, of course.
National School. And she needed an assistant teacher. And so she asked me, would I go as an assistant teacher? So I went there for 2 years and became an assistant teacher up in Billis. And then I got married.
Well, that's fascinating. And so you're... did you grow up in the Catholic tradition or the Protestant?
Oh, the Protestant Church of Ireland tradition.
And you were teaching in
Billis. Oh, well, it was a Protestant school. It's mixed now, but it was a Protestant school.
I see. So you're really from the south of Ireland, because that's where your father was. That's where you were brought up in that.
Mm-hmm.
So you married
What's his first name? 20, Kenneth.
Kenneth Dodd, yes. Or Kenneth North. Yes. And so you had a little shop then too. Yeah.
Well, his uncle died then the following year, and we went to live at the shop. Now, the shop was... there isn't a map about that. Maybe it would give you a better idea.
I think I know. It's quite close to Clonus area, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Do you know where Clara Markets are?
I do indeed. Yeah.
Well, that house over there, that was our house.
My goodness. Yeah. And so, what was North's was over the door?
K.H. North. Well, it used to be Gillespie and North, who was Ken's uncle.
Yeah.
And then we put K.H. North.
Oh, was it a drapery shop or?
No, it was a petrol filling station and groceries.
I see.
And you know what a country shop was like.
And so life went on as normal until 1969.
Around 69, and the trouble started, and the army started coming around, and well, my husband didn't want to make any difference with anybody. And if the army came in to buy a few sweets or cigarettes or anything, we always served them. But in 1977, the IRA, we went to a wedding in Derry, and the IRA came along and they put a bomb into the shop. And they told the people who were minding the shop for to go up the road and nobody would be hurt. And they put a creamery can loaded with explosives into the shop. So the people who were minding the shop, they, of course, it was about a mile and a half up to where my father and mother lived. So they went up there, of course, tell them what had happened. And, of course, my father rang the police and everything like that. And this was January evening, no lights, no nothing. And anyway, the police came out, but they didn't do anything, and the army didn't come out till the next morning. And when the army came out, the ATO officer had a look at it. The shop was, let us see now, the house was here, the shop was here, and the petrol pumps were here. So he decided that he would trail the creamery can out down below the petrol pumps, and he thought if it exploded, it mightn't damage the house. But anyway, he did all that, pulled the creamery can out with a rope. They didn't have the robots then. He just pulled it out with a rope, and we were standing down the road, and the next thing we heard, he was relaying the information to his colleagues, you know, down the road. And he said, yes, he says, oh, yes, he says, it's a bomb, all right. And he said, oh, look, what a mess. Run, Fred. And that was the little fellow that was helping him. So Fred ran and ran into the ditch. And we just saw his body going up in smithereens and landing in the market field.
Oh my goodness. He was killed. So he was trying to pull the bomb out of the house.
He was defusing the bomb.
Oh, he was defusing the bomb at the stage.
And he just looked into it and he said, oh, what a mess. It was the first anti-handling device that the IRA had, it seems.
And who was he, the man that...
He was a man called Sergeant Martin Eamon Walsh.
From where?
He was an ATO officer. He lived in Hereford. He told us I made him a cup of tea before he did it. A neighbour very kindly allowed us to use her house. I made him a cup of tea, and he said he was married and had two small children, a girl of four and a boy of two. And he, anyway, he said that, don't worry, he says it'll all be over in a few minutes, you know, and you'll get back into your house. Well, the few minutes was a couple of days. We didn't get back into the house, and the house was damaged to, well, not terribly, a bit at the roof and, you know, things like that, but it's nothing compared to a life. So, anyway, we struggled on. The IRA, I don't know whether they ever issued a statement, but we heard it was because we served the soldiers, that was why they did it. But they were trying to eliminate all the Protestants around the border at that time anyway. I mean, we weren't the first, but we were just lucky that we weren't killed. But Anyway, that was 1977. It went on and on. The army used to still do the patrols, and the special branch came out around the place and this and that and the other thing. Then in 1982, they put another bomb in. But luckily, they told us to get out, and we got out. And the final thing was, then there was another night, we went to a social down in Drumully, and when we came back, our hay was burning in the hay shed. And anyway, it ended up in 1989. We had, my father had died. We had got a communion table from a church up in County Meath and had put it down into the church in Drumully. And Ken and another fella went down the road with the trailer and a ladder, because there was one of the lights gone in church and they needed the ladder, the extended ladder, to put the light in. So they had gone down that, and Peter and I were at home, and the next thing we heard the dog barking, and they burst into the... Then Ken came in on the street. They burst into the house and they got Peter and myself and made us lay down on the sitting room floor. And Ken, when he got out of the car, they hit him a wallet and put a big gash in his head here. But anyway, they took Ken and myself over to the field, the market field, and tied her. Well, I always think there was a sort of a wee fence along the market field, and they tied us, made us sit down, and they tied my hands behind my back into the fence and tied our legs and left us laying there, sitting there, and told us to not move or to not get up, because if we did, there was a bomb attached to the wires. But then they took Peter away, and my son, yeah, he was 26 at the time. They took him away and they made him drive the huge bomb into Anna Martin checkpoint. But I don't know, the Lord above just had been looking down on us, because he knew, actually, he had often gone through the checkpoint himself, and he knew, you know, what it was like, and that he decided that if he could get down and warn the army, you know, to get out. So he drove as hard as he could down towards it, and he shouted that there's a bomb on the back of it. So they brought him in and they made him lie down, and they all lay down on top of him. And it was just the luck of the whole thing that only the detonators around the... it was an awful bomb, size of a bomb, one of the biggest ones. Only the detonators went off.
My goodness.
And so anyway, he was saved. And then all I can remember was the helicopter coming out, and you know, it was the lonesomest thing to see it circling over and us sitting in the field. And anyway, Ken was bad, poorly enough, but I said to him, look, Ken, we're going to have to get help. So we got help anyway. And we all survived. But then we decided that we'd had enough, that we just couldn't live there anymore. And at that time, I had a job in Liston Ski cooking in the army, or in the police barracks. And, it was catering manager, actually, in the police barracks. And I just thought we'd had enough. And we had a few pounds saved. And I said, you know, I said, we'll buy a wee bungalow in Liston Ski. You know, and we bought one up above, just up above the barracks. And we went away for a couple of days' holidays, and Peter was at home in the bungalow, and he got phone calls from the army, or from not from the army, from the IRA, to say that that they would get him in the end, to not worry, they would get him and get us all. So Peter just, when we came back, Peter just said, look, he says, if they want Ireland, they can have it. I'm away. So he went over to England, and he's been in England since. And we stayed on, and, well, the police put a sort of a magpie round the house, that we had sort of security, you know. And we stayed on, and we eventually sold the house because it was going to go to rack and ruin anyway. So we sold the place.
And that is some story, I can tell you. But why do you think you were targeted so much? Why did these people want to kill you and to kill your son and your family?
But they always reckoned it was because we served the soldiers. And you see, there was a Catholic shop down the road and they didn't serve them.
That's crazy. Was your son ever... He was not in the security forces
or
anything?
No, he wasn't in the security forces. He had gone to Greenmount and he had done his agriculture. Yeah. He had done his 3 years in agriculture in Greenmount. He went to New Zealand for a year, you know, the way they could go for a year after college. And then he came home and he did contract milking down in County Down. And had saved up enough money to buy or to build a cattle shed and at 20,000, and he never could put an animal in it.
Why is that?
Because he had to leave.
Oh, I see.
You know,
yes,
we had old sheds around the back of the shop, but this was a state-of-the-art shed, you know, for silage and everything in it. But he never got putting an animal in it. But he went to England and... He worked in a bar for a while, and then it was a coincidence that the Kiwis, they called them Kiwis, you know, the New Zealanders, they were doing exchanges, and they were doing fencing in Yorkshire. And some of them came into the thing one day, and he looked at Peter, and Peter, he says, what are you doing here? Wasn't it a young lad that he had worked on his father's farm out in New Zealand?
Oh, really? Wasn't that a coincidence? My goodness.
So anyway, he did fencing with them for a year. And then there was a job going as an agricultural or a garden supervisor, actually, in the Deerbolt. It's a prison for young offenders. And they have lovely gardens. And the young offenders, he teaches them the difference between a rose and a weed, you know, and things like that. And
he's getting on fine.
There are parks and gardens in England, and you see, if there's any of them that's any use, that get jobs in the parks and gardens once they did a bit of training, and this is what he did. So he's now, he's over a whole lot of things in the prison now. He's over the waste management, and he's over, different things.
How have you? Was there anybody ever held accountable for all what happened to you?
But then, do you remember the Moriarty case that came up in Donegal?
Mm.
Well, after that, he decided that he shouldn't have been blamed, that he was innocent, and this and that and the other thing, and he wanted Peter to come back and say that it wasn't him. Peter, we passed no remarks, so I think he's still there.
Imagine, yeah. But how do you feel bitter about all of this?
Well, if I said I didn't forgive them and things like that, it would destroy me. So there's a man above. I believe in God. And if there's a man above, and he'll judge them.
Yeah.
I did nothing wrong. Peter did nothing wrong. Ken did nothing wrong. And I have no quarrel with anybody.
So just to backtrack a small bit. So the first bomb, that man lost his life.
Yeah.
The second bomb that went in, did that explode in the shop?
Yeah, it did the end of the shop.
It damaged the premises.
We had to rebuild it. We had a mobile shop for a while, and we got it
and
done up.
Stay there, continue trading,
working,
imagine. And then after all that...
Yeah. When they took
your son as a human bomb,
that was the last straw.
Yeah, and
you see, Peter said, you know, he was quite strong because he played rugby and everything, And he wasn't going to drive it for them. And they said, well, if you don't drive it, he says, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll kill your father and we'll kill you. We'll shoot your father and we'll shoot you. But we won't shoot her. We'll leave her to bury the two of you.
You must have been a very tough woman, though, to put up with all of that. I mean, you must have... To be... I'm sure you were traumatised at the time and you were completely in shock, but you seem... Has it left a mark on you? Has it...
It's left a mark, sure. I'll tell you, when Peter went to England, Ken and I would have gone too, but my mother and father were still living up the road and I didn't like to leave them. You know, and I think if they hadn't been there, I would have gone to England. But I stayed on. Oh, well, you can't let them destroy your life. You have to get on with things.
How do you feel now?
How do I feel now?
About the Irish, about Southern Ireland.
I have great friends in Southern Ireland. I love Southern Ireland. My other son, I have another son, Alistair, and he is married to a girl from Ballyconnell, and her grandparents come from Clare, and we go down there to Clare, and you know, have the loveliest time ever. And you know, I've never been afraid of going back or doing anything. You know, I just thought, well, we were in Barcelona 2 days before the bomb this year. We were down that street.
Were you really? Oh my goodness! Yeah.
So
you're, but that whole, you must have been looking over your shoulder though, and you must have been knowing that people knew that, you know, kind of, you must have been, what's the word? You must have been. Suspicious.
When we came to live in Listenski, you know, it's a nice bungalow. Well, it's not that, but it's just an ordinary bungalow. But there's a nice view over the lake. You know, you can see the lakes from it and all in the back window. And Ken wasn't in that good a health. He had a clot in his leg and that. And I think he was glad maybe to retire because Peter had come home to help anyway. And I kept on working. Somebody had to pay the rent. And, you know, I did, the one thing did annoy me a bit was there were people who, if they saw me, they would cross over the street and not have to talk to me. Because I think they didn't know what to say to me. You know. But at the same time, I just passed no remarks. I still have friends out where I lived. And Alistair got married, and the two boys that were Catholic boys that were our neighbours was his best man at the wedding, and you know, we still have friends out there.
Oh, and so the shop, what happened to it? Well, in the end,
there was a man up the road. He had 7 children, and he decided he would buy it. And he was a Presbyterian, and so we thought, well, yeah, you'd sell it to a Presbyterian. That was okay, so we sold it to him. But he didn't make a great go of it, so he moved over to the Isle of Man. And then John and his son, Brian, he bought it off this Presbyterian man. And he lived there for a few years until his uncle died and left him another place. So he sold it then to Tom Conlon. And his son is in it now.
I see. So it continues. Yeah, it continues, that shop.
But we had a very sad experience. Tom Conlon's son, Frank, and Alistair, that's my younger son, were always very great. And Frank was best man at Alistair's wedding. And we were over in England. We were coming home from England. And Frank had been down in, where is it, Cork? You know, the Hillsiders, you know, that race. He had been down in Cork doing this race, and he thought he was going to win. He had come second in it last year. and he thought he was going to win it this year. And we were heading for the boat, and Alistair says, I must rig Frank and see how he got on at the race. So he rang Frank, and Candace was driving at the time, and he rang Frank, and there was no reply. And he says he mustn't have won, he must be away drowning in sorrow someplace. But anyway, when we were waiting to get on the boat, we got a call from one of his friends to say that he had been killed at the race.
How did he get killed?
He was doing this. It's a hill climb race.
Yes.
The Hillsiders, they call it. It's down in Cork. It happened in September there.
Well, point to point. Yes.
No, it was a motorbike.
Oh, motorbike races. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and they call them the Hillsiders.
Yes.
And there's a hill race. It's down in Cork, and
yeah.
South Cork, someplace. And Frank went down to it every year.
Yeah.
And knew them all and everything. And don't know what happened. He was, really don't know. He just didn't take a bend and crashed. And
so crosses come in many forms. Yeah.
Many forms.
Yeah. But listen, Maureen, after talking to your sister, it was lovely to come and talk to you. And
our shop was here.
Yes.
And then my mother's place was Ballyhoe here, and my sister's house is down here. They're we're only about four miles apart.
From each other. Imagine. So it was, and that story is definitely. I mean, it lasted right through. I mean, from the early 70s and all the way through until, my goodness, Maureen North. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I might as well tell you the rest of the story if you're not in a hurry for a minute.
No, I continue, please.
So, yeah. Martin Walsh had two brothers, and I was so annoyed, you know, after. I mean, you were asking me, did it affect me? Of course it affected me. And, you know, the fact that he had told me he had two small children, you know, Martin, before he was killed. And I thought, what will I do? Is there anything we could do? And I thought, and I talked it over with our clergyman at the time, and I said to him, do you think, should I write to the widow? You know. So I wrote her a wee letter, and I just said that I was very sorry that her husband had been killed while defusing a bomb at our house. And that I had told her that I had made him a cup of tea and was talking to him just before that. And he told me that he had two small children. And I said, I hope someday that someone will tell them that their father was a very brave man who gave up his life for his country.
Oh, that was
and I wrote that letter 20 years after. We got a call one afternoon from Newton Butler Barracks. The policeman said, oh, you're at home, Maureen. I said, I am. And he says, there's two people here, brothers of Martin Walsh's, would like to see you. I said, gosh, would you come out? So I went out to Newton Butler Barracks, and I met the two. Well, Ken came with me, and we met the two brothers. They had spent 20 years hating the Irish. Now, they lived in Wales, North Wales, in Rhyl. They had spent 20 years hating the Irish, and they decided it was time to come and look and see what actually happened. Because the British Army didn't give them much information about what happened or anything. And they decided they would come over and see exactly for themselves what happened, you know, and where he was killed and everything. So anyway, we took them out and we explained the whole thing to them and where they were going and sort of brought them in and made them a cup of tea and everything. And that was all right. The next year, they came back. They rang to say, could they come back on the 9th? That was the anniversary. Could they come back to see us again? So they came back and they went out and they put a wee wreath where the Martin was killed. And then they had worked very hard, and they're very wealthy people. They had an insurance Anglia Insurance, it is, and they had a construction firm as well. And if there were floods or anything, the insurance man would go out and assess, and their construction firm would.
Oh yes, and
it one helped the other. Yeah. And then they sold the business for $38 million. But they came over, and then they came over that year, and of course I gave them their dinner and we went out, and then they've come over every year since.
Oh, indeed.
And they invited us to come over for Ken's funeral. They invited us, one of them got married, a second marriage, but it was a marvellous wedding, and invited all of us to it, and we all went. And year before last, they paid $30,000 towards the building of the Arboretum in Leicestershire in England, in Litchfield. So there was never anything for all the ATOs that were killed. So they spent $30,000 and they put up a statue in memory and with all the ATO members around it, and they invited it to us to it as well.
Oh my goodness! And that all came out of
yes.
But I
didn't tell you the end of the thing. The letter that I wrote, the first day that I went out to the barracks in Newton Butler to meet them, the first day, Sean, that was one of the brothers, took a letter, took the thing out of his pocket, and it was, you know, you'd know it had been read and looked at and folded up many times. And he says, "Are you the lady that wrote that letter?" And I said, "I am." Well, he says, "Do you know?" He says, "That was the only thing that gave us hope."
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that they, like you explained, that they didn't have any contact or get much information about the debt of their.
But they didn't really bond. Until we came over. Until they came over themselves.
Yes, imagine.
So.
Well, I'll tell you. So it's an amazing story from start to finish, you know, and it's what came out of it and how you held tough and held hard right the way through it, yeah. And your husband has passed on, hasn't
he? He died. He had cancer of the esophagus. Mm. He died. I have Peter's in England. He has three children. The eldest fella, he came over to Queens and did photography there. And he's working back in England. And the other two are younger there at school. And then I have a daughter, Rosemary. She's a social worker in Belfast. And then I have a son, Alistair, who lives out in Derry Lynn. And he has pet shops. Mm. One in Sligo and one in Castlebar, Ballina and Ennis.
Plenty of family to keep you going, yes. And grandchildren.
Grandchildren.
Yeah. Thank.
And I'm very lucky. Yeah. They're all very good to me.
Yeah. Maureen, thank you. Lovely. Thank you.